We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Today we have guests from Vanderbilt Life Flight Helicopter. We have Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards with us. How are you this morning?
Doing great.
Doing good.
Thanks for having us.
So you guys flew here, I guess, this morning, landed in the parking lot.
Yes, we did.
That's pretty cool.
Did you hear us come in?
I heard you come on top of the building. That's right. So how long have both of y'all been a part of Life Flight?
I've been with Vanderbilt for 17 years.
And I'm working on 13 years.
That's a pretty long time. You've seen a lot of things over those years, I'd say.
Yeah, we tend to see more stuff in a day than most people will see in a lifetime.
I can't imagine. So what types of calls, I guess quite the variety, but what types of calls have y'all been on over the years that maybe stand out to you more so than others?
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, it's the moments, I think, that we know we've been a part of making a difference in somebody's life. A few of those for me over the years. I don't know if there's one specifically. The bad stuff tends to stick in your mind more, but the good stuff is what I try to focus on.
Same for me. And they do a celebration every year with some of the biggest, most significant calls in the region, and they do a celebration with all the first responders that are involved in a particular call and the patient and all that kind of stuff. But those are the kind of things. Greg and I were fortunate enough to participate in one of those, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago, from a bad trauma call that was down in Winchester, down Franklin County. And that was really, really cool to be a part of something that was a positive outcome.
I was going to say, you know, we've had a lot of first responders on the air with us over the years. And one of the things that is not talked a whole lot about is what they see each and every day. And that's got to be the hardest part, I would say, of the job. But then you got the flip side of it, the positive outcomes. You may see the worst of the worst, but there are positive sides to a lot of stories out there. Those are the ones who may come back to you and say, hey, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but 2 years ago, this happened and you guys were there and brought me to Vanderbilt and this is the end result. I made it. Do you get people like that who come in and say, you guys did help me and I did make it?
Yes, we do occasionally, and those are probably some of the most rewarding moments. There's a knock on the door. Sometimes you may have some advance notice that somebody's stopping by. Sometimes it's just a knock on the door and they're looking for a crew member, and sometimes it just happens that that crew member's you. But yeah, lots of pictures, lots of cards over the years. That is definitely one of the most rewarding things is when that family comes back to talk to you.
I think it's a full circle moment for the family as well. It offers some closure for them for that incident that occurred, and it's a great like highlight for us to be involved in those families' lives.
Now, are both of you pilots for Life Flight? And if so, what route did you take to get there?
I'm a critical care paramedic, so they would not want me touching the flight controls. And just my journey, I started in EMS. I was actually a medic here at Rutherford EMS for many years before I flew. And that's just EMT school, then paramedic school, then a boatload of experience before you start flying for me.
I started on the ambulance as well, and then wanted to go to nursing school. So I'm a paramedic and a registered nurse and just worked my way. And the cool thing, the average person that comes into Vanderbilt Life Flight has 10 years of experience before we even hire them, which I think is really cool. Something of value, I think Greg and I, we go way back probably 30 years. We worked on the ambulance together.
Oh, cool.
And in Williamson County, we were both medics over there as well. And we it's kind of neat to come back and be able to work here together as well.
I bet. And yeah. And for those listening, whenever you hear, you know, hey, I work as a paramedic in such and such area, I do this, I do that. there's different levels of what different paramedics do from county to county. And I don't know if the general public realizes that, you know, but some counties, they may do more medical type things than other counties may do. And I don't know how each county goes about deciding, you know, what we're going to do in these situations. But you guys are a little different. Life Flight's different from just the basic county level person who's in an ambulance as far as what y'all provide. Talk a little bit about what are some of those services that you do provide whenever you do get to, let's say, the scene of a wreck.
We have a tremendous amount of training that we have to be involved in annually. We have to have a certain amount of airway intubations where we put an airway down to breathe for people, medication administration, skills labs where we practice on mannequins and cadavers and all that kind of stuff. And so at Vanderbilt Life Flight, we like to say we bring Vanderbilt to the patient. And so we're trained at such a level that we're able to bring a little bit higher level of care than when they can provide on the ambulance. And we also provide blood administration and those sort of things that the typical ambulance is not going to be doing.
So when you get to that scene, are you providing different medications when somebody's obviously in pain in addition to making sure they're alive?
Totally. Yeah, we've carry a myriad of medications that the average ambulance doesn't carry. And we can provide those medications, provide pain relief. We can put people down that need to be more comfortable and needed to have an airway on them. So we can do those kind of things.
And again, with us this morning, Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards with Vanderbilt Life Flight. And the amount of calls that you go on, I'm just thinking back over the years, because Rutherford County has grown so much over those years, are you able to see a big difference in the number of calls you respond to today versus when you first started?
That's a great question. I think, especially in this area with Rutherford EMS, they are such a great and progressive EMS system that they probably utilize us a little bit less than they did 20 years ago, just because there's more ambulances, their capabilities are more. But total volume, I think, has increased over the years, but also the number of helicopters that are in Tennessee has dramatically increased over the years too. So I think the call volume has increased, but the call volume per aircraft has probably gone down a little bit just because of the proliferation of aircraft that are here.
When you land, what's the first thing you do? I mean, what are those steps that you go through whenever you land at the site of whatever the call may be?
We train for this all the time. We swap calls. So I may be a primary on the first flight. Greg would be secondary. And then on the next flight, we will swap roles. And so we have very defined roles when we approach a scene. As primary, I'm going straight to the patient. I'm doing airway breathing circulation. I'm going right down like the top emergent things that need to be taken care of. And then Greg is talking to EMS and the providers around to get a report of what's going on and everything. Yeah, so we have very defined roles when we're walking into a scene.
So how important is it for you to know and understand exactly what happened, what led to this injury, how the accident happened? How important is it for you to know those little things right away?
That does help direct care a little bit, but it will give us an indication of what might be wrong with the patient, so the mechanism of injury.
Yeah. Yes. We don't go too far in the weeds. Like if it's a motor vehicle crash, we don't go like how fast were they going?
Yeah.
You know, we know they're in a crash. They're sick. We need to help them and get them to Vanderbilt.
And all this stuff takes place in a matter of seconds to minutes. I mean, once you land, I know a lot of times you guys are off the ground in 5 to 10 minutes, it seems like.
That's the goal, is to be off the ground within 10 minutes.
That's pretty quick. I mean, when you talk about getting there, is the patient already, first of all, are they already on a stretcher when you arrive, or are you sometimes helping take them out of the car?
Sometimes, either or. A lot of times, by the time we get there, unless they have to be extricated or removed from a vehicle, they're usually on a stretcher or in the ambulance. But sometimes, depending on the severity of the accident, we may go to the vehicle or wherever the patient is instead of on the stretcher.
Now, I know everybody assumes you only respond to, you know, auto accidents, but there's more than that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and we do, our base, we do a lot of scene response calls, but we also do a lot of interfacility hospital transfers. So a Tullahoma Harton or a Vanderbilt Bedford has a patient in the ER or the ICU that needs to go to Vanderbilt or to another facility, and we'll do that.
And sometimes those calls are just as important, and the response time is needed to be just as quick, I guess, as the call from the scene of an accident. I guess it just depends on the situation.
Correct.
Yeah, and we're able to provide ICU intensive care unit level care in the aircraft, so we can pick up the sickest of the sick patients from whatever hospital, usually a smaller hospital, and that patient needs services at a bigger hospital that hospital can't provide. And we can provide that gap in care during transport.
How far are you traveling in some cases? I mean, what's the furthest you sometimes have to go in order to pick up a patient or to pick up somebody at the scene of an incident?
Typically, each base that we have 8 rotor wing bases, is a 60-mile radius from that base. But like if our sister base in Tullahoma goes out, we may respond down and do a longer distance response.
About 100 nautical miles is our kind of the limit because of fuel, without making a fuel stop somewhere. So operationally, we try to stay within 100 miles of our base, but that just depends on the situation.
I know when we came on the air this morning, we kind of just jumped right into it, but we only have so much time each morning. But when you are going to different accidents or incidents that do occur all throughout the area, sometimes you've got more than one person who is needing to be transported to a more specialized hospital. How do you go about making sure that, you know, okay, there's 2 people here who need help, there's 3, there's 4. How do you go about deciding who to take first or who to call for, let's say, ground transportation to a hospital? How do you decide on what to do once you get there?
So we always have to be activated by an EMS service or fire service, a public safety service. So almost always someone's going to be on the scene before we get there. And typically EMS will triage patients and say, this one needs to go first, this one second, this one third. And then they will utilize or organize resources as they feel like they need. If we get there and recognize that, hey, there's more than just one patient that needs to be flown, we can help organize with our dispatch or the ground crews additional resources as needed.
But now you can only have, what, 1 patient in your helicopter at a time?
That's correct.
Can you have somebody ride with you or fly with you if it's somebody who was in that car but they're not seriously injured?
We can. We can take a rider along with us. Usually it's going to be for a child.
Yeah.
We'll try to take a parent with us. There are limitations still. We still have to fall within a certain weight and balance. And if a parent exceeds that weight, unfortunately, they can't go. And they got to put their full faith in us.
Yeah. That's got to be tough for that parent. It's got to be tough just telling them. Hey,
that's probably some of the toughest conversations I've ever had is like, look, your baby's really sick. I'm going to take great care of them, and we're going to get them to Vanderbilt. Those are tough conversations.
In those cases, do those emergency workers who are on the ground, do they usually take over and say, hey, we can take you to the hospital? You know, we'll get you there as soon as we can. It may be 30 minutes, but we'll get you there. Don't worry, we're going to get you there.
If they're injured, then absolutely. They could coordinate bringing that other patient to the same hospital that we're going to as well.
And again, you guys have been doing this for a long time, but your careers started with ground transportation as opposed to flying patients to hospitals. Over those years, you've seen the development of new hospitals even. Mm-hmm. With that being said, does that make any of this, what you do day in and day out, any easier as far as the care that is provided? I mean, because the level of care has gone up over the years at different hospitals.
I think just historically for me, I have, when we go to pick up the patient, the care that's been provided before we get there is tremendously better than it was. It's some facilities even 10 years ago. Yeah. So the better they're taken care of before we get to them, the easier it makes our job. So I would say yes.
And it's amazing the technology today versus even 10 years ago. I mean, there is a big change in technology. Does that technology fall over into the helicopter as well? And if so, what types of things have changed within the helicopter itself?
I think technology, yeah, it's pretty incredible. We have access to ultrasound on the helicopter. We have ventilators, IV pumps, all those kind of things that we can finely tune settings in to deliver a better management to that patient. Totally, yeah.
And it, with the aircraft too, the avionics packages, the GPS and mapping systems, the radars, all of that. And I'm speaking a little bit outside my expertise level, but I know that the helicopters are extremely advanced, probably even more so than some of our medical equipment these days.
And of course, the great thing about flying a patient somewhere, you avoid that traffic that's on the ground. So obviously, that's one reason why you get them there a whole lot quicker.
Oh, when we fly, a lot of times, like we don't have time to pay attention to traffic when we're flying to Vanderbilt. But when we're turning around and going home on our return leg, and you look at that traffic on I-24 coming back to Murfreesboro, it's just like, that is brutal. I'm so glad we're not down there.
Now, are you at the same location, at the same, you know, base for the helicopter each shift that you work, or do you switch around to different locations?
We are all each helicopter base, and we have an airplane too. We have assigned crew members to that base, and for scheduling, they try to schedule us at our assigned base as much as possible. Now, we do float to other bases depending on schedule needs, but 90% or more of the time we're at our assigned base.
Hey, I guess holidays and stuff like that, you guys have to sometimes work, what, extra shifts for some, and people work for you?
Usually a lot of extra shifts, but there's, like on holidays, there's a higher likelihood you're going to get moved to a different base. But yeah, we usually get 90%, like Greg said, yeah, at our base.
But we do, we're 24/7, 365, so somebody's working every day, and we have a system where if you work this group of holidays this year, then you'll go to kind of the bottom of the list for the following year. So no one is stuck working all the holidays every year.
Working a job like this, there's no room for staying up too late the night before then going into your shift. How do you go about living just daily life? Because if I was a mechanic down the street, I could stay up till 3 a.m. if I wanted to, and I would do just fine the next day. But you can't be tired the next day for your shift, whenever that shift starts.
Yeah, I've done this long enough that for over 30 years, I've been in some kind of weird EMS schedule and have learned that you got to get your rest your night before, or you're not your sharpest, you're not your freshest.
Yeah, I know personally, I try to shut it down the night before and just make sure I get a good night's rest before I go into shift.
Are there more restrictions on those who are flying versus, you know, you work for an ambulance company and you're on the ground? Are there more restrictions on the number of hours that you can actually work, or are you working extended hours in some cases?
So we do 24-hour shifts, and we do 36 hours a week. And that's usually made up in a 24-hour shift and a 12-hour shift. And then that 12-hour shift can be a day or a night shift. We're limited by Vanderbilt to work only 60 hours a week. We can't exceed that 60 hours. Now, typical EMS, we could work 48 hours, two back-to-back shifts, and just go with it.
Wow.
That's completely allowed. But traditional EMS in the county settings, they've changed their scheduling a lot. They've really made a lot of improvements to help the medics and the EMTs that are working on the ambulances.
One of the other scheduling, we have to have 10 hours off between clinical shifts. So if I worked a 24-hour shift yesterday, then I've got to be off 10 hours before I can start another clinical shift.
It seems to be quite different from county to county, from city to city, and you may have some crews at 48 hours on and then
four days off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it does seem to vary quite a bit, I guess, just depending on the department.
It does, and I think, yes, county to county, department, even probably departments within Rutherford County, whether I know EMS is on the same schedule, but different fire services might have different schedules like that too. So, and the smaller counties can probably work longer stretches because their call volume is not real high, but your busy systems, 48 hours in a really busy system is tough.
It's brutal.
I don't know how to phrase this. There's no, at least it seems like from the outside looking in, there's no good call that you respond to. In other words, the good part about that call, you may not find out about until a year later, 6 months later, 2 years later. Every call you respond to, I mean, there's a reason LifeLight's responding. It's a serious situation, I would assume, in all cases.
Yeah, it's mostly. Sometimes there's availability of services, and being able to transport a patient a long distance would enable us to go in. Physician orders it. They want us to do it, like for an interfacility transfer. Maybe transport some patients that have a lesser acuity than what you might imagine. Mm-hmm. But it's necessary because of length of travel or services that are needed.
Our airplane, I could remember a couple of transports for organ, not organ donors, but someone who got the call, hey, we have a kidney for you. And because of the time restraint, we had to fly to another state, pick them up and bring them back. And the joy that that the patient and the family both had, like, we've been waiting X amount of time and it's finally here. So we were there to pick them up, to get them. So that's kind of the polar opposite side of what we usually see. And that's rare, but that occasionally happens too.
Yeah, those are calls I didn't even think about, but you guys are doing that as well.
More so on the airplane side of things because of distance and time instead of the helicopter, but yeah.
We got to take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about what happens day in and day out and the things that you sometimes have to see that probably you wish you didn't have to. Again, LifeLight is with us this morning, and today we have Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards with Vanderbilt LifeLight. Again, we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back in just a minute.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you.
Don't be trashy, recycle.
Recycling isn't just about tossing materials in a bin. It's about knowing which materials are accepted. Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle Right Tennessee.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have lessons for anything with strings, mandolin, guitar, bass, you name it. We have lessons for anything with keys, Music World and Drummer's Den, and a professional drum teacher as well. So if you need to learn to play something, we have you covered. Come on in, buy you an instrument, start learning today at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come see us for all your fall gardening and home needs. We have everything you need to make that yard look beautiful, whether it be grass seed, fertilizer, or anything to decorate that yard. We have everything you need to make your lawn beautiful. The Co-op Farm and Home Center is located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church. Weekend shoppers, we're open from 7 to 2 on Saturdays. And remember, you don't have to be a member to shop with us.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
In studio, we have guests from LifeLight Helicopter. Again, LifeLight with Vanderbilt. We have Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards with us today. And we have a couple of questions that people texted in. And our number is 615-893-1450. And one of the first questions was, I hear about stuff like this happening a lot, and that's bad weather. Do you fly in bad weather?
Yeah, type of weather. So thunderstorms, absolutely not. a day like yesterday where the clouds with the ceiling, the cloud ceiling has been low or the visibility is limited. We have limited capability when the weather is like that. But some bad weather is a bad word to use because it's a negative connotation. But we can fly in some less than optimal weather. Any type of severe weather, we're not going to fly in that.
And I guess, you know, helicopters, airplanes, they have all kinds of computers in them today to help you fly, navigate, see how high you are. But the problem is you're having to see exactly where you're landing. I mean, because you're landing on the interstate in a lot of cases or some rural back road. You don't have the option of seeing runway lights or anything remotely close to that.
No, not at all. Yeah. And yeah, if the weather is marginal like that, unfortunately, we can't do it. They will offer another aircraft maybe that does have instrument rating where they can fly in the clouds and that kind of thing. But and there are some occasions where we will respond in a ground vehicle, call it a rapid response vehicle, and we can rendezvous with EMS or rendezvous at a hospital.
You mentioned things like transporting organs, you know, from one hospital to another. In those situations, are airplanes always used? Is it the life flight airplane, or are helicopters sometimes used for that too?
I don't know from our service that a helicopter has been used for that. I know our plane has occasionally. That's not a common thing, but and it's the patient that's usually coming back to Nashville for that transplant and not necessarily the organs themselves.
And then I know you were talking about the most rewarding part of doing what you do is later finding out, you know, this person made it and this person, they're doing well. Maybe their family stops by, they stop by. But those types of stories, is that what kind of refuels you? Is that what kind of recharges you in a way that you don't have that recharge on a regular type of a job working at Walmart?
I think there's some level of that with the job because it is a job, right? Like we get in the mindset where we're just doing a job. But yeah, that definitely refuels you. We do something unique here within Vanderbilt Life Flight. We do follow-up on every patient flight that we've made. So 4 days after a patient was flown, whatever crew's on duty that day, we'll dive into the patient's chart, whether at Vanderbilt, and look to see and be able to provide some follow-up to the crew that transported them and to the people that requested us to fly them.
It's pretty cool you're able to do that because, I don't know, something about knowing the outcome of you handled a piece of this puzzle. You know, you were part of this. So knowing the outcome or knowing what direction that person, that patient is headed as far as their care and what happened next, that would be important to me. I mean, even if, you know, you're told, well, we don't know, we can't give you this answer yet, it would be an important piece of the puzzle to me.
And we typically, that's part of our process when if we pick up from a crew, we transport to the hospital. We'll get the crew's number before we leave, and when we get back, we can immediately call and give them feedback and say, this is what happened while we were with the patient. After we get back, we can look them up in our system if they're at a Vanderbilt facility and see what's been done since we left. So I think that's good loop closure for the ground crews as well that we're able to provide.
Communication is pretty much everything, I guess, when it comes to the world of medical and emergency situations. So when you land at whatever hospital it is, assuming Vanderbilt more likely than usual, I guess, but when you land, what information are you telling doctors or nurses that first couple of minutes that you're there?
It's very regimented. When we take a trauma patient to Vanderbilt, they have a whole team up there. We give them a 10-minute heads up, like give them alert, like this is a trauma alert, we're bringing the patient in. And even in the trauma bay, it's very orchestrated in what each person's role is assigned and what they're doing and all that kind of stuff. And then we provide the information of what happened to the patient, what we've done for the patient, and then they take it from there.
Are there ever any situations where once you're at the hospital, after you land, after the patient is, you know, taken by those who work at the hospital to whatever room they're going to, be it surgery or whatnot, are there situations where you will then talk to the family that maybe arrived by a car who were in the area, and they're coming to see that loved one right after that wreck happened?
We always try to get a phone number for a family member before we leave and try to call them as much as possible to let them know what's going on and where their loved one is.
Because I guess sometimes they may have no clue what may have just happened. Mm.
Yeah, and sometimes they will, depending on the, since the time of the accident, word gets out and that family member is already arrived at the hospital before we get there, and we will always check the waiting room to see if anyone is there related to the patient if we know that information, and just give them a brief update of how things are, and that I think that relieves tension and anxiety a little bit for the family.
The human body is amazing in itself, but there's limitations for everything. Are there sometimes situations where somebody, well, it seemed like they were doing good on the helicopter, and an hour later, you find out they passed away? I mean, are those situations things that you have to deal with?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And those stick with you, especially if you think, yes, things have turned a corner, we're doing good here, everything's better, and then it's a surgical something that was unrepairable. So, yeah.
Or I guess somebody, they could have a heart attack after, you know, after they get to the hospital because of all the trauma their body's going through. I mean, I guess there's no telling what could happen.
It happens in front of us even. Like, you know, we're doing everything we can and the patient deteriorates right in front of you. And those are, like Greg said, that stick with you. Because you're doing everything in the world that you can to save this person. Sometimes it's out of our hands.
I mean, they're going through a lot, I would imagine, no matter what, because you're being called to a potentially fatal incident. What are some of the things that, I guess, have stood out to you the most over the years in doing what you do?
I think one of the coolest things, and this goes back to when Greg and I were working on the ambulance together. We worked a guy that he arrested. I think we picked him up with chest pain or something.
Mm-hmm. So heart attack.
Yeah. And he lost a pulse as we were pulling into the ambulance bay at the hospital. And we started CPR and doing all the stuff. And we worked this guy with the ER staff for, I don't know, 45 minutes, something like that. And they were about to call him deceased. And the doctor said, is there anything else anybody else wants to do? I just like, can we just give one more medication, one time, give it a try? And we got a pulse back. And the coolest thing is that was awesome to see that. But they invited us to a celebration of life. The gentleman made a full recovery.
Wow.
And he and his family each gave me and Greg a Bible that was super meaningful, had a message written in it. And it's those kind of things that stick out in your mind the most.
That was one of those knock on the doors, the lady at the door. Hey, is she asked for me or Frank? And I said, well, hey, you found me. And she said, well, my dad wants to meet you. And it was this gentleman. Now, this was probably 5 or 6 months down the road. But that's the Bible I carry to church to this day. So,
again, with us from LifeLight this morning, we have Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards. Are there days where you say to yourself, you know, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I don't know if I can take another week of this, you know, because of the things that you experience.
Yeah, we talk about our cups getting full, and early in our careers, you got a really big cup with very, very little in it, or backpack, whatever you want to call it. But yes, I think all of our cups start to fill over time, and I think some people get to the point in their careers where I'm probably one or two really bad calls away from I'm going to choose to do something else, but not quite there yet.
I feel the same way, and I think over time, like as long as Greg and I have been in this industry, you learn with healthy coping mechanisms. There's a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms out there, and over time, we've tried to make as many healthy choices as we can to help us get through that time. You learn how to deal with that mental trauma that you're dealing with, and to speak with people and to get it out. And yeah, that's just something that comes with the maturity of being in this industry for so long.
And Vanderbilt is incredibly supportive. At Lifelight, we have a very robust peer support system, and we learn how to take care of ourselves and each other. But Vanderbilt has been instrumental in helping us develop that and provide that for each other.
Are these, when you talk about, you know, there may be times where you think, you know, that this is just too much to handle, are those things that every paramedic, every nurse, doctor, are these common things that they go through throughout their career as well, at least from the conversations you have with others who are in that industry?
100%.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think on the public safety side, I'd heard a statistic once that there's a great percentage of people that get into the EMS field that get out within the first 2 to 5 years, because it's just too much. And then you've got the other folks like us that are lifers. So,
and then you're taking that home. Whatever you see, you're taking that home with you each day, each night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, the importance of having a good support system, a good self-care plan, and then, you know, somebody that can advocate for you, that can recognize when something is off, or you're in a worse spot than what you realize.
And for those who have done jobs like this, you know, the last 10, 20, 30 years, they've got to have a good support system in the house at home too. I mean, their spouse has to be behind them 100%, because I don't see how it could work if that was not the case.
A lot of times it doesn't.
Yeah.
But yes, you're correct. And if you have a spouse that's non-medical, that's not in the same field, it can affect them in much different ways than it affects us too. So
they just won't understand it, I mm-hmm. guess, in a lot of cases.
My spouse, she's non-medical. She doesn't understand a lot of what I go through, but she knows when I'm needing a break, and she gives me that and allows me to go unplug, take a nap, leave the house, do whatever, and she fully supports me, and I know she's always got my back, even though she doesn't fully understand what's going on.
I know we're already out of time, but again, with us today from Life Flight, Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards. If anybody listening, if a family member listening maybe has a story about something that their loved one went through, Life Flight came and saved the day, so to speak, would you encourage them? I mean, are you okay with them calling the main Life Flight number and saying, you know, hey, I just want to say thanks to so-and-so, reach out to them and say I appreciate it, even though, and I'm sure that may be a hard call for family members to make at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And any of our social media platforms, they can also mm-hmm. reach out that way as well.
Definitely a good thing to do, because it sounds like that really, it helps.
Absolutely.
Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Again, we've been talking about Life Flight with Greg Johnson and Frank Edwards. Stay with us. We do have local news coming your way next.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
No middlemen,
no mystery,
just fresh picked produce
straight from the Tennessee dirt to your dinner table.
Rutherford County Farmers Market,
where our family feeds your family.
Rutherford County Farmers Market, there's something fresh every week. Tuesdays and Fridays, 7 to 1 on John R. Rice Boulevard.